From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, you're listening to the COIN Podcast Network.
Okay, so joining us for today is Writer's Block, Stuart Perrin, very fascinating author and man in general. Thank you so much for coming in. I know you're only in Oregon for, what, about a week?
Yeah, I'm here for a week. Yeah. I'll be here till next Wednesday.
But you come here quite often, and I want to talk to you about your book, From Darkness to Light, and how that was inspired by an inmate at the Coffee Creek Correctional Institute, and we'll get to all that. But I first want to talk about just your life story, because it's so interesting in how you got into meditation and yoga and everything you're doing now, and up till now when you're leading these retreats. So you grew up in New York.
I was born in the Bronx, New York, in the South Bronx, actually. You know, tenement area of New York.
And I think when most people think of the Bronx, they don't think of, you know, oh, there's going to be this yoga guru, this meditation expert that comes out of there. So how did this all come to happen?
Well, it's a rather incredible story. When I was 16, I was in Miami with my mother and my sister, Miami Beach, and get a phone call that my father is very sick in the hospital, and that we should come back to New York. Flew back to New York, went to the hospital. My father had 106 fever, and he was kind of in a coma, and he didn't recognize me or my mother, and, excuse me. And we, this went on for about a week. And after I walked into his room, and he was lying in bed in a state of complete serenity, complete stillness. And I looked into his eyes, I could see a million miles. The whole room was full of light. Mm-hmm. I was 16, it was like amazing to me. And I spent, you know, an hour sitting with him. I asked him if he knew me, he shook his head, he couldn't talk, he said yes. When I left the room, I met his nurse. And I said to his nurse, what's going on in there? And she said to me something that changed my life. She said, to her experience, just before people leave the world, you know, they go into a state of complete serenity, total surrender, you know, and preparing themselves to leave. They let go of everything. And my first thought is, why did my father have to wait 49 years to find this state of serenity? 15 minutes before he died, an hour before he died. It changed my life. I was a very good basketball player when I was younger. I was thinking of getting scholarships and going on and doctor, lawyer, something like that. And I became a hippie, a beatnik. My whole life went into revolution. I said, I'm going to find somebody who can teach me how to get that serenity before I'm here, 15 minutes before I die. And then I spent 8 years, 9 years of my life going half around the world looking for a teacher in Europe, in Africa. I was always on my way to India. And after that, I'll tell you the story. It's an interesting story. I was arrested in Spain.
Wow.
And I spent about a month in prison in Spain.
For
smuggling, you know. This is back in the 60s.
Okay, okay.
So this is not like 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And I said, it doesn't get worse than this. I said, Stuart, you really have reached the end, the bottom. And I said, something has to change. And I remember I met a guy in the prison. He was a German guy. And he said to me, we became good friends, and his father was one of the first people to ever go to Tibet, who knew the Dalai Lama. This is back in the 60s, this is a long time ago, in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And then he met in the yard one day. He said, you know, I have $1 million worth of marijuana in Malaga. I need somebody to bring it to Sweden with me. And I said to him, look, I don't care if you have $1 billion worth. I said, I never want to come back to a place like this again.
Mm-hmm. And so then what happened?
And then they let me out,
and
I went back to New York, and I had no money, I was broke, I was living on the floor of a friend of mine's apartment, and he said to me one night, let's go out and have dinner, there's a great, you know, Mideastern restaurant, and that's kind of food I like, down in the village. So we walked down into Greenwich Village, we came past an Oriental art store, and we're looking in the window, and all these beautiful Buddhas and Tibetan tankas and museum stuff in there. And this friend of mine said, you know, why don't we go in and look? I said, you know, Charlie, I'm broke. What am I going to do in there? You know, this stuff is He said, it doesn't cost to look. And this is the second most incredible thing that ever happened in my life. And I went in there, and standing in the middle of the store was a man. Like a magnet, I was attracted to him. And he showed me pictures of himself studying with his teacher in India. And we were talking for about maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I felt like an energy come into me that I had never experienced before. And he said to me, if you want to come study with me, come tomorrow night. And at 5 o'clock. And as I was walking out of his store, I looked back and he was standing there. I saw coming out of him the same light that I had seen in my father's hospital room just before he died. And I said to this friend of mine, I said, I don't know what happened in there, but I got to go back and meet this person, you know? So we went out, we had dinner, we went back to this friend of mine's apartment. It was a tenement apartment with a bathtub in the kitchen and these places you used to live in when you're younger, mm-hmm. and toilet in the hallway and the whole thing. So we're walking up the stairwell and we meet a guy on the stairwell who said, how'd you like to come have tea in my apartment? So he said, great, okay. Went into his apartment. This guy had $500,000 Oriental art collection in his apartment. I mean, we're talking a slum in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And I said, where did you get this stuff? He said, well, there's a guy in Greenwich Village named Rudy. And that's the guy I met an hour ago.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
It's insane, huh?
Yeah.
So I said, Stuart, the gods are talking to you. Mm-hmm. You have to listen for once in your life. Mm-hmm. I went down there the next day. I mean, this breaks me up, you know, this whole story. And from that point on, we were like...
Like that.
And I said to him about a year after, I said, Rudy, what happened that day? And he said, I saw you looking in the window of my store. And it was like seeing my son lost in the universe. And I just pulled you in the door. Hmm. That's how this all started.
And that, what year was that?
Oh, 1967.
67. And so then for the next several years, it sounds like you guys traveled the world and you studied.
Well, I studied with him for 6 years. Mm-hmm. He asked me to go to Texas to teach. He started a meditation group down there. And then the two of us were in an airplane flying in the Catskill Mountains. We hit a mountain. And I was in this airplane crash with him. And he died in that airplane crash. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I'm alive is he put his soul inside, his life force inside. I was holding his hand when we hit him out.
There were three of you
there were
able
four
to walk
of us
away, right?
With Rudy.
And he did not survive.
And he's the only one. The other three of us spent a night on top of a mountain in the middle of February.
That's crazy. It's crazy that any of you have survived. Yeah. I know he was he writing something at the time?
He was writing a book, and he was dictating to this woman named Mimi. And the first thing I thought when he died, I said, Stuart, you don't have a life anymore. I said, you don't hit a mountain and think that your life is anything but a miracle, mm-hmm. that you're living, breathing. And, you know, so my life has been devoted to doing what I do.
And that just propelled you to go even further?
Well, teaching,
yeah.
Running meditation groups, mm-hmm. and doing what I do. I do it quietly. I don't make a big deal about it. Mm-hmm. I don't promote myself, mm-hmm. although I'm here kind of promoting something. But I don't really do that. I just do what really, literally, God sends me to do.
What is it? I know that you go to certain places, like Coffee Creek, but why are so many people, whether it be in jail or elsewhere, seeking something like this?
Well, people make mistakes, you know? And the first thing I tell people in places like Coffee Creek, the past doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. What you have in your life is today. And if you make today work, the future will take care of itself. You know, because they made a mistake. They did something. And we live in a society that's very hard to forgive people. You know, but I go there and I tell them, if you learn to work on yourself and build a system inside that is strong enough to connect with spirit, your entire life is going to change. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to Isabel.
Yeah, and so I want to talk about Isabel because that somebody emailed me about your book about her. It's called From Darkness to Light. And it's about the letters that you exchanged with her while you were teaching there, you still go there every 3 months to Coffee Creek?
Yeah.
And so tell us just about how that all came to be, because it sounds like she was going to those meditation classes when you were there.
She, when I first met her, I'd been teaching there for maybe a year or two. And the first time I met her, I looked that she had blue hair. She was this kind of, you know, scrawny little kid, about 20 years old, 21 years old, with incredible fire in her eyes. And I saw that this is an incredibly intelligent kid who made mistakes. She was a junkie. She was, you know, she was selling dope on the streets and got busted for it. And then she started coming to my classes, and then she started writing me these letters, and I started answering that. We have 160 letters in here that we wrote to each other. Mm-hmm. And I realized that this is an incredibly intelligent young lady who made a mistake in her life. Mm-hmm. You know, was reaching out for something in life that was out of the ordinary. She didn't want to fit into the ordinary kind of evolution of life. And she made a mistake. She became a junkie, and she was rebelling, and then she, you know, then she started doing the meditation. And the thing that I teach people is that there are two major things. The one thing is being connected to spirit. Understand? The second thing is being able to live in the world. Mm-hmm. Both of these things are very powerful energies. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, they talk about when Krishna manifests in front of Arjuna, if the light of 1,000 suns suddenly appeared in the sky, that's the energy of spirit. That's how strong it is. You know, life itself, we all know, is a pretty frenetic, difficult place to be. Mm-hmm. And the reason why people mess it up so badly is they don't build a system inside that is strong enough to be able to live in the world and to be able to be connected with spirit. And that's the thing I teach in these meditation classes that I do at retreats, at Coffee Creek, and mm-hmm. wherever I do them. And she responded to this so extraordinarily well mm-hmm. that, you know, she just began to change literally in front of my eyes. And this completely confused, mixed up, terribly unhappy young lady, you see it in the book, the letters at the beginning are this arrogant kind of, and then one day I wrote her, she was complaining nobody ever writes her back. And one day I wrote her in one of the letters, I said, I understand why nobody writes you back. You know, the arrogance. The,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then it all changed. And then she started getting some humility and understanding. Mm-hmm. Today she's going to Reed College.
Yeah.
You know, she's one of the hardest schools to get into in America, full scholarship. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And not only that, she's now in a Russian program in Vermont, where she's going to learn Russian and spend the entire summer not talking English, but learning Russian.
That explains the, I got an email, because I emailed her about this interview, because we're hoping to talk to her when she gets back here in the fall. But it said, I'm in a program where I cannot speak English for several months.
Yeah, she's learning Russian.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So it was just life-changing. And in her letters that she first wrote you, that are in the book, I mean, talk about just why she was writing you. Because you said you get letters from inmates often. It sounds like because you've spoken to so many of them over the years.
Yeah, most of the letters are people reaching out for help. Mm-hmm. Her letters also were reaching out for help. Mm-hmm. But her letters, you know, they were literary. They were literary, which is really blew me away. Because most of the letters I get are not literary. Mm-hmm. You know, and it just, you know, and when I started getting them, I said, wow, this is an incredible kid. This is a really smart kid. Mm-hmm. This is a kid who has an amazing capacity to do something wonderful in her life. And I started building that in her. Keep telling, you'll see the patience I had in here is like unbelievable with responding to the kind of letters she wrote me initially. Mm-hmm. And I recognized that beneath this veneer of tension and insecurity, and there was an amazing being there that was dying to be born. And my job was to give birth to her, help her. I was like a midwife trying to help her.
Well, there's a visual. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's exactly what it was like.
Yeah. You know?
Anyway, it was an incredible thing. And she came out. She went to community college, straight A's. Then they accepted her back at Reed College, full scholarship. Mm-hmm. And now she's doing, it's wonderment.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And to me, any human being can do this. Mm-hmm. They just have to learn how to do it. because everybody has a system inside that can be developed. Everybody has a mind. Everybody has breath. Everybody has, what they don't have is the training and how to build that system so they can, you know, live with an open heart, with love, with compassion, with joy. I always tell people, you know, think, oh, guys in long beards with, you know, reading from the Bhagavad, these are not the enlightened people. Mm-hmm. Happy people are enlightened people. But to find a happy person on this, you can find the Holy Grail before you can find somebody that lives every day with joy and love inside them. You know?
Is it hard to train? How hard is it? Because I work the early morning shift and I have trouble getting to sleep a lot of times. And someone said, well, instead of using sleeping pills or whatever, why don't you try meditation? So, of course, I went on YouTube and just typed in meditation. And there are 1,000 things, yeah. A million probably, and it was just like beach noise and I was supposed to breathe. And I thought, this doesn't work.
No, look,
and I gave up. Like, how long does it take to learn how to do this?
It could be a week. It could be 20 years. Mm-hmm. It could be 20 lifetimes. But the key is learning how to get grounded inside. Mm-hmm. You know, learning where to go inside yourself, where there's foundation, where there's grounding, then learning to use the tools you are literally born with, which are mind and breath, to develop the foundation inside yourself. Because once the foundation is developed inside, then the heart is like a flower. It's like a lotus flower. It needs stem. It needs roots. Without stem and roots, it opens and closes and creates a lot of emotional turmoil. Mm-hmm. But once you get grounded, the Japanese call this area right here the hara. Mm-hmm. The Chinese call it the tatien, and they talk about qi. Qi is the real power in a human being. And the whole foundation and fundamental teachings that I do is learning to use the mind and the breath to develop this chakra, what's called a chakra, right below the navel, mm-hmm. where there's qi, there's power, there's foundation. Once that gets opened, the heart can open. Mm-hmm. Once the heart opens, there's love, there's joy, there's compassion, there's the ability to touch other people, have patience and forgiveness with people. We're no longer intimidated by life, you know, because we recognize the fact that life is not going to change. We have to change. The mind gets quiet, and then we begin to receive not intellectual knowledge, but real wisdom, which comes from the universe.
And someone like Isabel that really benefited from this, is it something that you just kind of walk around with? Because, you know, again, when you hear meditation, you sit down for 30 minutes a day or whatever the time is and do that. It sounds like that's not really how it works.
No, it's not. You have to work at it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been doing this 45 years. You know, and I always feel every day I get up, I'm just beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, like I told you before, with my life now, I have to get twice as strong, and I'm not a kid anymore, you know,
yeah.
to be able to do the things I do. So you have to work at it, nonstop work at it. It's like my teacher always used to tell me, he said to me, Stuart, you know, you can love me, it's great, but don't love me, just learn what I have to teach. Mm-hmm. He said, don't let your emotions get entangled. Learn what I have. One day I'm not going to be here anymore. Your job is to learn what I have to teach. And I tell this to students of mine, because one day I'm not going to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. But I teach something which is amazing. And I spent my life developing it, and I learned it from a great master who was also born. He was born in the slums of Brooklyn, my teacher, and I was born in the slums of the Bronx. Mm-hmm. You know, and I learned it from somebody. And I used to spend time with him, and I was 25 years old, and I said, my God, New York City became a temple when I was around it. It became something sacred. Mm-hmm. And New York City was never an easy place to live.
Yeah.
You know, but it suddenly became magical. And I said, I have to learn how to do this.
And so you've had success with her, so much so that you put together this book. I know you have several books. If you go to your website, you can find them. Have any of them involved students like this, or is this the first one where it involved a
Well, they all involve students.
They all involve students.
Yeah, but this is the first one dealing directly with this type of situation.
Yeah.
I used to do this in the 70s in a prison in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah, and I know you still go to Coffee Creek now, and you're actually in town for, or in Oregon for a retreat.
Yeah.
It sounds like you do that all the time. You're constantly traveling, going to these.
Well, I have my birthday retreat in August, and then I'm going to Mexico. I was invited to teach, and then I'm going back to Brazil in October, and I'll be back here in September, and that's what I do.
Yeah, so if people want to find out more about, you know, maybe how they could go see you, they just would go to your website. It sounds like that's the best way. And do you have any books that you're working on now?
I'm working on a book that I love. Mm-hmm. It's different than these books I read. It's a novel from that I wrote about the 1960s.
A novel? So this would be your first novel, right?
No, it's my second novel.
Oh, it's your second novel.
I wrote a novel called Little Sisters that was published about 2013.
Okay.
You'd like this because I set up with a student of mine in Kathmandu a safe house to work with doctors and NGOs to find children that were prime targets for sex trafficking from Nepal and India. Mm-hmm. And this student of mine and I, we ran this for 4 years. And out of this, I wrote a book called Little Sisters, which deals with that problem.
Yeah.
It's a novel.
Yeah.
But it deals with that problem. I once told somebody, if I would have tried to make a documentary movie like this novel, they would have killed me in India. Mm-hmm. Because it really shows you what the hell goes on in the darkest area of human existence, which is the sex trafficking thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wrote this novel in 2013.
Wow. Yeah, I'll have to look that up. And then the one you're working on now
is called Madness Falling from the Sky.
Okay. And what's the general synopsis?
The synopsis, three young people that were raised in the Bronx, mm-hmm. now living in the East Village in New York. Mm-hmm. And it's their three stories. And one of them is an actress, one of them is a painter, and the other one is a journalist. Mm-hmm. And it's like a tapestry of their three stories. They're very close friends.
Yeah.
And it takes place in New York, in Paris, in Morocco, in Greece, in Vietnam, mm-hmm. and it really encompasses the 60s, what really went on in the 60s, from the sexual thing to the drug thing to the war in Vietnam, and mm-hmm. you know, the young people looking for some way of living that's out of the ordinary, you know?
Which it sounds like you experienced in
which
the 60s
kind of autobiographical book, you know?
Yeah, but it's probably also another form of not, I don't know if therapy is the right word for you, but just writing, it sounds like it kind of keeps you grounded.
Yeah, it's also, to me, it was a wonderful teacher writing this book because it told me so much about myself.
Yeah, wow.
And I never wrote a novel like this before.
It sounds great.
And
I can't wait to
see
it.
Very interesting book.
Yeah. Well, Stuart, thank you so much for coming in. And I know you have to get off to Eugene, but we really appreciate your time because I know you're a very busy guy, but just so fascinating. And I can't wait to meet Isabel in the fall when she comes back.
She'll be back. I think the end of August she'll be back.
Okay. All right.
Great
thank
meeting
you.
So you.
Much. Yeah.
Hey, wonderful. I enjoyed this very much.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this presentation from the Coin Podcast Network. To hear more great podcasts, head to coin.com, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.